Welcome to Psych Talk. I am your host, Jessica Lee, a licensed clinical psychologist and self-growth coach for women in helping professions. It is my mission to motivate, inspire, and educate you on everything psychology and self-growth. Whether you are a mental health professional or student in the social science field, are interested in psychology and mindset shifts, or are just interested in gaining skills and knowledge to grow into the best version of yourself, this podcast is for you. My hope is to provide you with knowledge and skills that you can implement in your daily life that add up to make a big impact. So let's dive into today's episode. Hey everyone, welcome back to Psych Talk. I am super excited for you to join me for today's episode. I have a very, very special guest, Dr. Roseanne Capanna-Hodge. She is a certified school psychologist, licensed professional counselor, certified integrative medicine mental health provider, and board certified neurofeedback provider. She also is the founder and director of the Global Institute of Children's Mental Health and Dr. Roseanne and Associates. So Dr. Roseanne, thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, I'm looking so forward to having this discussion with you, and we can talk about mental health and teletherapy.
I'm super excited as well. So I know I just introduced all your credentials and everything, but I want you to have an opportunity to introduce yourself, a little bit about your background and what you do.
Yeah. Well, I'm a children's mental health expert who's really on a mission to change the way we view and treat children's mental health. I have worked with thousands of families in this 30 years, grateful to be working for 30 years, helping families reduce and reverse mental health using only proven holistic therapies like neurofeedback, biofeedback, psychotherapy, and really just walking parents through that journey of helping them unwind and address these issues that kids are facing at a crisis level in America and across the globe, as every therapist does know, right?
Exactly. And, you know, we were talking before we hit record about our passion and love for both working with children's and teens. And for me personally, I think it's such a population that if we can help them at that level and at that age, then it sets them up for success in the future, which is why I love working with that.
Yeah. I mean, it really does change the trajectory of their whole life when we get kids early. And, you know, the sad part, Jessica, is that kids are not being caught early. According to NAMI in 2019, it takes 11 years from the onset of a mental health symptom for a person to get proper mental health help. That's 11 years. And that may be shocking to people, but I feel very strongly that that's pretty accurate, considering that's what I see when, you know, I'm sort of this person that's known for complex cases, and I work with, you know, PANS and, you know, bipolar and ADD, all these kind of layered cases. And most people have gone to dozens of providers before they get to me.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. And I think a lot of times people, at least in my experience, and you can share if it's been different for you, first stop for kids is pediatrician. And there's a lot of medical interventions to try to figure out why, or the school. And I know you've worked in the schools, and then eventually they will get to a psychologist, therapist, but it's after they've tried all these other different avenues, professionals, things like that.
And it's so perplexing why, you know, 30% of all physician visits with a pediatrician or a general practitioner are about kids' behavior. 30%, I think, is a lowball estimate. That's according to research. And I'm so perplexed why therapy isn't recommended from the get-go, and more specifically, parenting therapy, because parents are the agents of change. And they don't know what to do. And if we show them what to do, it really makes a dramatic difference in a family and child's mental health.
I completely, completely agree. You just mentioned you work with PANS, bipolar, ADHD. Do you have specific clinical interests? Are you across the board? Things you're most passionate about?
Well, I definitely have specific clinical interests. And, you know, what happened to me is I was working, I didn't have a desire or an inclination really that I was going to have this large group practice that people would fly into and that I would be on TV literally constantly and, you know, really getting the message out about kids' mental health. And I was working in a school as a school psychologist doing psychotherapy and, you know, psychoed, neuropsych testing, really loving what I did. And then what started to happen was the school professionals started asking me to work with their kids. Then they started asking me to work with their friends' kids. And the next thing I knew, I literally was working all day Saturday and Sunday. And I am a daughter of a very successful entrepreneur. So I had said to myself, no, thank you. I want to work 7 days a week. But I already was working 7 days a week, my school job and doing this. So I made the leap and I went out to work with people. And really right out of the gate, Jessica, I got known as sort of like a psychological detective, that everybody would come to me when their kid was essentially treatment resistant, where they would go to a good therapist and wouldn't get better. You know, they would try psych meds and not only didn't help, it always worsened things in the cases that I was seeing. So that really became my standard. And when you deal with complex layered cases, oh boy, you better know neuroscience. You better understand medical interventions and the science behind them. And so I just started to get these really tough cases, which then really moved me into, which I already was holistic and was using evidence-based holistic treatments like psychotherapy, but nutrition. I was doing a lot of nutrition and work with supplements, and then just moved me further. And that's how I got involved with neurofeedback and biofeedback, because the evidence is there and there's thousands of research studies. But today I'm really, really known for working with PANS and PANDAS, people with Lyme disease, OCD, you know, a lot of concussion work, and, you know, just places where with individuals, kids with autism, ADD, often they have multiple diagnoses. So I'm kind of like a multiple diagnoses, my kid's not getting better kind of expert. And pre-pandemic, people just would fly in all the time. So, you know, I definitely work virtually with people and have for a long time. And now we sort of have even shifted more to that. But my passion truly is probably PANS, PANDAS, and OCD, because I have to say, in terms of therapists and medical providers, there just is not information out there. We're misdiagnosing these kids. We are mistreating these kids, and people don't have training and knowledge in this area. So it's one of my missions, and it's really what people seek me out for, because honestly, they don't have anywhere to go as parents. They don't have anywhere to go. And I'm really known to help turn things around and stop this treatment resistance.
Hello, would you like to learn to meditate? Or perhaps you've meditated for quite some time. I started around 50 years ago. As you know, meditation is good for lots, including stress reduction, letting go of anxiety, self-exploration, and ultimately awakening. If meditation or awakening interests you, check out my podcasts on Awakening Together with William Cooper. All of them are free. Both the description and the link are in the show notes of this podcast.
That's awesome. And as I shared with you before we hit record, I didn't even know what PANS and PANDAS was until I was on my internship last year of my PhD program and saw it on the psychiatric inpatient. And we've already discussed having you back on the podcast to talk about.
I'd be honored to do that, because I know that when I speak on it, it's something that therapists need and want. So I think it's really an important conversation, and it's really on the rise. That the research says that it's about 1 in 200 children have PANS and PANDAS the United States. So we're seeing it and therapists are seeing it and they don't know it. So we'll save that.
We will save that. you did a good transition to my next question, but then I brought up the PANS and PANDAS, but talking about teletherapy, because that's what we're going to be talking about today. And this is something that all of us therapists, clinicians, anybody in therapy has become very familiar with this past year during the pandemic. But outside of the obvious pandemic, can you briefly discuss why we need teletherapy in mental health and some benefits of teletherapy?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, therapists were thrown into teletherapy, and I have yet to meet a therapist that received teletherapy training in their graduate program. So I'm guessing in 2020 and 2021, a lot of therapy programs, graduate programs revamped. So, you know, I've been doing teletherapy for, I don't even know how long, at least a dozen years. And prior to, you know, Zoom, and I use a HIPAA compliant version of Zoom because I love Zoom and it's easy. And that's what we were using. Yes, it's expensive, but it's, for us, it's worth it. And, you know, I was doing teletherapy, right? So teletherapy in itself has been around since the 1960s. And what the first thing every therapist needs to know is the research says it's as effective as in-person, right? So the problem is therapists were ill-equipped, thrust into this. And I don't even know what the statistics were pre-pandemic, the amount of therapists who were actually doing teletherapy. I'm going to tell you it was probably less than 10%. That's my guess, right? Would you agree on that, Jessica?
I would agree. I knew nobody personally doing teletherapy before the pandemic.
And so, and it wasn't that that was my mainstay in tele, that wasn't the main way that I was working with people. But I also did a lot of consults with people and virtually, right? I could do educational consults on cases with other providers and parents, you know, in that way. So I had been seasoned. And so when the pandemic happened, you know, people knew that I did teletherapy and people were reaching out to me from all over, and including my own team of therapists. I was worried about the quality of their therapy, because we thought it was temporary. I knew it wasn't temporary because I know a virus takes about 3 years. We're only in the middle of the pandemic, everybody. Nobody wants to hear that. You heard it from Dr. Rowe. I have a lot of high-level government people that come to me too. So I already knew, you didn't need to know. I didn't need to hang out with them. It's what a virus. Look at the Spanish flu. It took 3 years. So we're in it. So I was worried about what my therapists were doing. Were they band-aiding it? We need therapeutic interventions, not joining activities for weeks. And I was really honestly pretty mortified in some of the Facebook groups. I mean, people were playing Minecraft with their clients, Scrabble, all kinds of things that I was like, where's the therapeutic goal and what are we going to achieve? And so teletherapy, like in-person therapy, is equally effective and under the same conditions, right? So client motivation for us, Jessica, we work with kids. I find kids really easy in therapy. Even the kids are like, I'm not going to do this, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. You know, this is why we work with kids. We're like, I like to have fun and I know how to build rapport, right? So it's those engagement techniques we can talk about. So having that, it's a skill and experience. So how qualified is a person in that area? What experience do they have? These are factors that influence therapy outcomes more than anything else. And that rapport connection is a big part of it. Does the, you know, client have rapport and trust with that? And really one of the biggest determining factors is the therapeutic goals and working on therapeutic goals. That's how you determine if therapy is efficacious, right? So again, what I decided in the middle of the pandemic, so anybody who knows me I'm super efficient and I have a super fast processing brain. We're all smart. We all went to graduate school. Did graduate a year early for my doctoral program. So I'm kind of on that trend. And then I did a boatload of neurofeedback and I'm paleo and really started meditating at a high level. So then my brain went to a whole other level. So why am I telling you this? Because you're going to ask me how I did it. So I wrote 4 books in 4 months during the pandemic. So Jessica,
nobody can see me, but I just like the shock on my face.
So I'm really into what I do. I'm super nerdy. I'm constantly studying. I have like a file cabinet of research stats in my head. And my first book was 200 and something pages, 40 research citations, 40 pages of research citations. Who am I talking about? And it's a book for parents. It's going to come out May 11th called It's Going to Be Okay. And it's really how to reduce and reverse mental health using proven therapies. But at the end of the three books, it was like June and I'm sitting in my hot tub scrolling, looking for books and activities for my therapist to do in teletherapy, which I think everybody else was doing. And all of a sudden it was like 7 o'clock at night. And I realized, oh my goodness, nobody has written a book for therapists about teletherapy activities. And that then I got out and I wrote the frame for my book in 2 hours of teletherapy, teletherapy toolkit. It's all virtual activities for teletherapists that work with teens and adolescents, and it's 420 pages. So it's not a light book. It's very visual. And so the other part that I saw that was happening is people were moving away from the activities that worked in office, tactile, kinesthetic, visual activities that really kept our kids engaged. And with so many kids having special needs, 2011 research says that 54.2% of the US population children have a physical or a mental health issue, a clinical issue. So would you agree with that, Jessica? So engaging these kids with behavioral learning and attention problems means we got to hustle as therapists, right?
Oh, definitely. Yes.
100%. So talk therapy and teletherapy is not going to work. It's not going to work with kids. It's not, especially if they have special needs and there's a barrier to how they learn. And I hope that's an aha moment for people, because barriers to learning means they can't learn in therapy in the same way. And so I really made all these ready to use, easy things based on, you know, sound theory and that therapists could use in a visual way that were kinesthetic, because that was missing in teletherapy. But I think therapists, a lot of them, I mean, child therapists are already very imaginative, because kids make us be.
Yeah, we have to be.
We have to be. They'll eat us alive.
Yeah, we can't just sit down and talk at them because they're going to fall asleep.
No, exactly. It's why every pair of pants I own have a little stretch in them, because sometimes you got to sit on the floor.
Exactly.
You know, how about all the time you got to sit on the floor? So, where, you know, you show a parent how to do an activity or whatever it is and stuff like that. So, or you're running in the hallway, lots of running in our hallways. And we have basketball hoops at the back of every door. And I always say, when you get the body moving, the lips move. So it's how to engage, right? So, you know, I think teletherapy is here to stay. And it's very interesting. I mean, a lot of therapists that I'm talking to, they gave up their lease. They're not going back.
I've heard that from a lot of private practice
therapists. I mean, it's accessible. It's nobody's canceling appointments anymore.
I know my show rate, when we first switched to teletherapy, because I work for a hospital, so like we have like quarterly meetings or whatever. Yeah. And the head of our children's hospital was like, your productivity has like, it went to like 150% because everybody was showing up. And everybody showed up.
It doesn't matter if there's bad weather.
No, it doesn't matter if there's bad weather. It's for me, you know, kids being in virtual school, which I know we're going to talk about, they can schedule appointments during the day where they're not coming out of class. A lot of my teens no longer had to coordinate with parents because they are like, I mean, the parents gave consent for them to meet on their own. And they would be like, oh yeah, 10 a.m. on Monday works fine. And not having to worry about, oh, let me check with my mom if she can drive me.
Yeah, she can drive me there, right?
Yeah. No, so
And I think what else is really fascinating is, you know, people always again, people would come to me from very far distances, not atypical for somebody to come from another country to me, which I'm honored but saddened, because it meant that there was really nobody else filling that need. But people, it's not unusual. I have multiple people right now who want to be seen in person. Don't ask me why, but they do. And they drive 3 hours each way, more than 3 hours each way, more than once a week.
Oh my gosh.
So, you know, you do what you got to do for your kids. But what's great is there's a lot of other people who are like, no, I can see you virtually now. And even though we would offer it, people were resistant to before because they couldn't wrap their mind around it. And they would say, it's not as effective as in person. And we would say, give it a try. Mm-hmm. And they would say, no, I'd rather do the 6 hour trip or 3 hour trip or whatever it was. But now people are like, can we do it virtually? So we are seeing people in person. We will always see people in person. But I'm mm-hmm. going to say that our psychotherapists, the majority of their clients are being seen virtually.
Yeah. Before I went on maternity leave, I would say that even though I was starting to see people in person as well, that it was probably like 25% in person, 75%. Yeah. Virtual.
Pretty unbelievable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think most cases are if the therapist is using visual and engaging techniques, really setting up great boundaries, like you would in an in-person session, like who's going to be there? How long are they going to be there? Right? Like laying down the law with the parents, like, I don't want to see the dog and the three siblings in this session, right?
Yeah. You can't be in your car in the Pizza Hut drive-through.
You can't.
Boundaries.
I love when I do an intake and the littles put their faces on the screen the whole time. It gives you such a window into how people are parenting, right? Yeah. I had this mom and dad come on and they're like, listen, Ro, like I had known them before. And they were like, we are terrible parents. And I was like, you're not terrible parents. And they're like, we don't know how to set boundaries. So they started to tell me what was going on, how they couldn't even handle setting up virtual learning for their young child. Like it was a kid who was like 6 or 7. They didn't know how to structure anything. They were like, you know, attachment parents, and they were always there and no structure, no boundaries. And when their kids kept coming in, you know, the diaper changing in the middle of the interview, I was like, you really are terrible parents. Like I can say that. I say it with love. And I was like, you're not. I was like, well, you don't know how to set a boundary and I'm going to teach you and you're going to slay it. Mm-hmm. And they're like, thank God, Ro, because we need it so bad.
Yeah.
But what insight? I don't think I would have gotten there. I literally got it in the intake, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's one thing I talk about with my colleagues all the time. Like doing teletherapy gives us as providers so much insight into how these individuals are living. And I know one thing for me, like working with teenagers, even like where they do the session gives me insight. Like, are they in their bedroom? Their parents are like, okay, we're going to be downstairs away so you have your privacy. Or are they like in a closet because they're so scared they're not going to get their privacy? Like that's telling within itself.
So telling, right?
Are the siblings running in and out in the background? Are parents or caregivers yelling in the, like, we get so much insight. And I think for me, at least, that helps me be a better clinician because then I can address.
Yeah. And we do a lot of work with individuals with OCD. About 80% of them have PANS and PANDAS. So we only use exposure and response prevention, the most empirically, the highest level of empirical evidence for the treatment of OCD. And I'm going to tell you, it works like I've never seen anything in my life. So we are ERP. That's what we use. And it works. Okay. Yep. And I've spent probably 20 years doing other things and it didn't work. And this is what works. We combine it with neurofeedback. We do ERP and clients get better in a way that I've never seen. I had better success with heroin addicts than I did with OCD prior to doing ERP.
Oh, wow.
That's how serious and that's how effective it is. And it's very rigid. And a lot of therapists don't like it because it's so rigid, but it works.
Yep.
Just saying that. But one of the coolest things is that we've been able to do, and again, we did it before, but now you get to see it on a larger scale. We've been able to do exposures right in their house.
Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
Sometimes we did do field trips for exposures, like out in the community, if there was something really related to that. So that's been really pretty incredible. And our therapists who do ERP, we really feel like we're able to move the dial quicker in that regard. Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, and ERP is all about creating safe exposures.
Yeah.
You don't go right into the hornet's nest, as we like to call it. You got to do a buildup.
Yeah. Trust. Gradual.
Yeah. And gradual exposures. And then they learn how to take control of their intrusive thoughts and compulsions and really talk back to that OCD and anxiety. It's pretty incredible.
Awesome. So you've touched on a lot of things like, you know, not going away from the evidence base, setting good boundaries, keeping those goals in mind, not just talking at the children, having engaging activities. Is there anything else as clinicians you feel that we need to be doing to maximize the effectiveness of telephone?
Yeah, let's unpack goal setting. So I think, you know, as somebody who trains a lot of therapists and has for, you know, 20 years, is that goal setting is one of the most missed opportunities in psychotherapy, especially with, you know, whether you're working with adults or whether you're working with kids that and their parents. Goal setting is all about psychoeducation. It's your opportunity to educate that person about their own or their child's issues and what is going to take to move the dial and the behaviors, right? Because we're all about new learning and changing behaviors. It might be a lot of micro steps. And I think in our culture, I know in our culture, and I'm in like ground zero of the most impatient people in the world, the suburbs of New York City in Connecticut, in this whole area, people are fast talking, fast moving, and really ridiculous expectations for things. What my little story is leading to is that people have mismatched expectations, right? So people think a pill is going to fix things overnight. They think a couple sessions are going to fix your kid. And that opportunity to discuss goals is pivotal in helping your client understand what's going to happen, what needs to happen for change. And it really, we know that goal setting leads to greater treatment outcomes. So using that time to explain what the issue is, what the goals are, getting clarity on it. I will put a whiteboard up. I'll draw pictures. I will print out the goals, whatever it needs to happen. And it's not a one-time thing, goals.
Yeah,
I like to go back all the time. And really what we do, and I've always done, is we use a Likert scale. Mm-hmm. So we actually take our behaviors and put them on a Likert scale. So for anybody who knows what it is, real simple, get yourself a Google sheet and write down those behaviors. I don't care if it's 2 behaviors or 10 behaviors, and put a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being your symptoms are low and 10 being the highest, and have them measure. We do it every other week. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. So they get a sense of progress, because I think we don't celebrate the micro steps, and everyone thinks things are going to happen overnight and get, and I say to everybody, it didn't happen overnight. It's not going to change overnight.
Exactly.
So got to take a little work, some uncomfortableness. And I talk about the healing trajectory, not being a straight line, but a bumpy line that goes up. And, you know, those kind of things can be really pivotal in managing expectations and getting clients to really sink in that it's going to take some work, but it's, as I always say, it's going to be okay when we do that. It's going to help resolve, it's going to help reduce and reverse those mental health symptoms.
I love that. Yeah. And I can totally relate. I can't tell you how many parents will tell me, like, you know, after a couple of sessions, well, you know, their behaviors aren't getting any better. I'm like, well, first I have to build rapport with your child before I can even really do things, because they're not going to trust me to engage with them. And also, like, everybody needs to be doing the work. It's not, and I don't know, you probably experience this a lot too. Like, they want us to fix the child, but not do
absolutely
the work. Not all parents. There are phenomenal parents out there, but
No, and that's where painting the picture of what the process is in that goal setting in the beginning is so pivotal. And then when people don't listen to me, I literally have a magic wand and I pull out my magic wand and I say, see this magic wand? This isn't a reality. I don't have a magic wand. And you need to do X, Y, and Z. Are you willing to do that? Right. So, and particularly in our ERP, ERP is really serious. Like you have to do the work. It's not called homework. It's called practice. Cause if we call it homework, then they're like, I'm out, but there's a lot of practice. And actually our ERP clients, the parents couldn't be more motivated because truly on average, I would say the least amount of therapists a person has ever come to us before starting ERP is 4. Okay. But I would say on average, most of our people, even kids as young as 9 and 10, they're seeing a dozen or more therapists.
Oh, wow.
Before they get to us. So when I mean those parents have a pain point and are motivated, they are like, I'll do whatever it is that you want. And I was like, you're my favorite kind of people. Yes. You know, like it's awesome. Right. So, and it's about trust, right. And helping them change that dial. But, you know, when it comes to this process, you know, educating parents and all those pieces is really pretty, pretty powerful, and letting them know there will be setbacks. Mm-hmm. Because they don't really get that. But, you know, I don't have people anymore. I remember one time I was like, oh, I had somebody call me. Of course, it's the daughter of a psychiatrist, right? She called me after 2 sessions and was like, we are not seeing the behavior change. And when I mean, I mapped it out, I write everything down, you know, I was like, honey, this is going to take some time. If you're not ready to do the work, you should discontinue.
Yeah.
And she did, but you know, in ERP, a small segment of people won't do practice. And if parents aren't doing the psychological work and the behavioral, you know, changes, those little things that create these big waves, right? Changing how they get kids to cope, right? This is everything. This is ADD. This is anxiety in all areas. But in ERP in particular, if they're not following the program, it really wastes their time. And so we tell them, hey, listen, are you doing the work? And they'll say, we're not willing at this time. And we say, we have to put you on a 3-month pause and we'll reach back out to you. Because it's that strict in that process. That is part of why I love ERP, because it's like, you're in, but you're not.
Yeah.
There's no middle road, but that's not how every therapy works. But, you know, getting people to commit really comes to me through the goal setting and the psychoeducation process that happens in the beginning and continues throughout the whole process.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. And you mentioned earlier, the book you wrote, the Teletherapy Toolkit, which has, it sounds like a ton of different activities and everything. And, you know, I don't expect you to talk about every single one of them, obviously, yeah. But are there certain activities that you want to highlight that, especially for children, helping them keep engaged in teletherapy? Because like we talked about, we're not sitting on the floor. I mean, we might be sitting on the floor in teletherapy, but like we're not face to face with them rolling around on the floor doing those things.
No, we're not. You know, we're not throwing a weighted blanket on them or having them get on a ball next to us, but maybe we could get it home. So the book has over 180 activities and also parent information sheets. So part of what I've always done is like, if a client has ADD or PANS, like I want to give them information and I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of the internet. So it has lots of producible things, but the book is broken down by clinical issues and types of therapy. So as well as my book has, I'm a big fan of somatic therapy. And for people that don't know somatic experiencing therapy by Peter Levine, I would really encourage you to watch one of his trainings or some of the other people like Janae Fisher, who's done some great work. She has some great books. Our basis of our work is getting individuals to connect their mind and body together, right? And to do it in a very purposeful and intentful way. And that's what somatic therapy does. And we're moving to a very dissociative society where we want to disconnect from our body. And until you connect to your body, you will not be able to recognize our body alerts symptoms like anxiety, grief, depression, and you won't resolve. So lots of infusing of techniques, questions that help you to get your client to connect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's lots of activities that you can either send to the client in advance or pop up on the screen, but very kinesthetic, broken down. You know, there's things for impulse control. There's things for anxiety. There's things for OCD in there. So, you know, we tried to, and these are techniques and activities that will be familiar to people. We just took what worked and we rebranded it and made it accessible and useful for the teletherapy format, which, you know, I think a lot of people, I mean, I have tons of these kinds of books, right? Like a new book comes out, we're always looking for creative ways to engage our clients and particularly kids. Mm-hmm. And this just was really succinct and useful. And a lot of therapists, like, you know, we call it the handbook of virtual, you know, teletherapy activities, because it's just, it is the first of its kind. It's the first book ever written on this topic. And I'm sure it won't be the last.
Yeah, no, I love that. And I actually was talking to a friend recently about somatic therapy and like, and I feel like at least in my circle of professional connections, a lot more people are becoming familiar with somatic therapy and integrating it into yeah. their practice. But it's something that I feel like, I mean, I know in grad school, I was not taught about
no.
somatic therapy. And
it's not a new therapy.
No, it's not.
It predates psychiatric medication, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's such a common sense approach to it. I'm really into the neuroscience of stress. And I talk about the stress hyperactivation of the nervous system. And once you're in a fight, flight, or freeze mode, this is our autonomic, you know, system. Mm-hmm. You go into a sympathetic dominant state, your frontal lobes go offline and you're not really capable of rational thought. And what's happening is everybody I'm getting is in a stress hyperactivation. Yes, I literally can physically see it because I do QEG brain mapping, which is a whole conversation, but I'm able to see the formation of brain waves and you can use it diagnostically, right? But you don't even need that. You can tell by the clinical symptoms people are presenting with, you know, somatic issues, stomach aches, right? And you're in a hospital, right? Is everybody coming in?
I was about to say, like, it's amazing how many people will come into the hospital for gastrointestinal issues or headaches, and the medical team. And luckily, since I'm there now, and I'm very thankful I work in a hospital that respects the field of psychology and yes. wants to work with the field of psychology. But they'll come in, all the doctors are running all these tests, everything's coming back negative, negative. So they'll consult me and be like, we think this might be anxiety or stress. And like once, and a lot of times, you know, luckily I've perfected my approach so people aren't as scared of being in a medical hospital and seeing a psychologist. But at first it was like, no, I'm not stressed. I don't have anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, but now like once you talk to them, and if you do it in the right way and approach it in a non, like,
yeah.
this is not, we think you're crazy. Like, this is how
your body is responding.
That is exactly what
exactly.
I talk about. The integration between mental and physical health. Like I go on this whole spiel and then people are saying like, actually now thinking about it, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
Your parents are like, okay, no, now, or, but in the pandemic, I have seen this so much, especially for
so much.
They're, I mean, everybody's life turned upside down, but like, I mean, kids are now at home. They lost their social group. They lost their sports and activities. Their whole world turned upside down and they come to the hospital for physical symptoms.
Yeah. That and their parents are stressed out, mm-hmm. overwhelmed. You know, the APA Stress in America survey said that, you know, 70% of parents in 2020 reported significant stress due to parenting and teaching from home during the pandemic. No surprise.
Yeah.
And, you know, co-regulation starts with a parent. And so when a parent is highly stressed, a kid is going to be highly stressed. It's just that way, not to make parents feel bad,
no,
but it's the neuroscience. But when I approach this as from a neuroscience perspective, and I just talk about it from the nervous system, I don't ever get anybody defensive. They're yeah. like, oh, that's why the lights bother me. Oh, that's why she throws up at night. Oh, that's why she's constipated or has diarrhea or can't sleep or whatever it is. And they just start understanding. And I'm like, this is what your nervous system is doing. Let's talk about the ways to get your nervous system into a regulated parasympathetic I call it the hot tub chill out state. And let's talk about ways to do that. Because guess what? There's a lot of natural evidence-based ways to do that. And let's see what worked for you and your family. And everybody always improves when they do it, you know, when they incorporate these lifestyle changes and clinical techniques into exactly. their life, you know? So I'm glad we're opening up our minds to the understanding. I mean, this impact of stress, there's a whole field called psychoimmunology and what happens to the body under stress conditions can be a lot of things. So we're in the pandemic wall and people are recognizing, you know, that I need to do more. And, you know, psychotherapy is definitely a starting point, but when somebody's really hyper-stress activated, they're not capable of learning. So that means that that learning that should occur in therapy is going to go down to such a small level. And then they're going to hate psychotherapy and never want to go back to it. And they need psychotherapy, but you've got to regulate the nervous system first.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. So we've been talking about teletherapy specifically, but you just mentioned parents, you know, being stressed about having their kids do online learning and things like that. So as we are wrapping up, do you mind talking a little bit about virtual learning for children and teens, either how to keep them engaged, how this is impacting them? The floor is yours.
This is still a huge conversation because I'm going to tell you that we're in the early part of 2021 and we're doing this interview. And now I mentioned the pandemic wall, and what I'm hearing from, and tell me if you're hearing this too, Jess, is that I'm hearing that attention and motivation is in the toilet right now.
Yep. No, but I realized, like, I love doing this on video, but nobody can see me. But yes, I just like did a big finger down as
down. Was and this saying is that. What everybody wants to talk to me about. Like, they all want to talk about that. And motive for some people are low motivation. It's slipping into depression right now. So let's go back to what improves engagement in virtual learning. And luckily I had, you know, I did all these, you know, neuropsych testing and worked with people. So I'm all about differentiated instruction and teaching kids, schools, parents, how to engage kids in learning who have a hard time learning. What I'm going to say is everybody's having a hard time learning because virtual learning and the way that it's done right now isn't at its highest and best. People were thrown into it. It's the Wild West educationally. So number one, structure and routine, right? So putting structure and routine around your virtual learning is a non-negotiable. That means your kids are set up to learn at a certain time. They know what it is. And in that structure and scheduling, you must have movement. You have to get up every hour on the hour and do a few stretches. I don't care if it's a yoga, you know, crescent moon. So going to the right, going to the middle, then going to the left and doing that in three rotations. You know, getting up and, you know, just really getting your body to get your back to get out of that sacrum where it's crunching and it's going to get some flow. You could also do some figure eight. So if you can imagine taking your hands and putting them together and then making an eight where you cross the midline. This is an activity from Brain Gym. Instantaneously, you'll increase the blood flow to your frontal lobes. Standing up and moving your body in that swaying way helps to do it. So those are some just really easy, easy things. Using things like Zoom glasses. So I have my Zoom glasses on now. We are not designed to have this blue light exposure. It's going to mess with our melatonin. It's going to impact our sleep. Yep. And it's really going to cause a lot of problems. Having chewy, crunchy snacks and carbonated non-sugar beverages. So seltzer, things like beef jerky, nuts help to stimulate the brain to keep you engaged. And then having a place that is a dedicated learning place, even if it's at the kitchen table, you know, have bins available with the supplies. When your brain knows this is my place for learning, this is the time for learning, your brain will alert differently. It's not going to spend time thinking about these other things. And then really, you know, getting your kid to not have their phone next to them when they're on there, you know, removing distractions, closing out different pages and just being on there and talking to your kids about this. But movement is critical, sleep, and really healthy food. And that is not what you think. It is not, you know, it's reducing carbs, but more specifically gluten, grains, getting rid of gluten, grains, sugar, and it really, really increasing healthy fats. Healthy fats are going to help with neurotransmitter activity and help with alertness. But we, you know, can't expect kids to be sitting for 5 or 6 hours. We shouldn't be doing this as therapists. I hope the therapists aren't doing this. And I hope you're taking a 1 hour break in the middle of the day and getting up and moving.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know. Well, that's when you were talking. First of all, thank you, because that was very, very helpful. But I was just sitting thinking, I was like, and these are things that one, all of us should be doing that are sitting on the screen, but two, even things to integrate going back to teletherapy, like get up and move with your client. Like, yeah, you're in front of the screen.
Yes.
Okay, let's stand up and do these things. Or you want some crunchy snacks while we're talking?
Yeah. Sure.
Or have a dedicated place for therapy. Like, so I don't know. And I like
structure your therapy session with routine in the beginning, the middle, and the end. I mean, that's what we would have did in person.
Yep.
Right. You know, you see the attention waning and kids are laying there, and I feel bad for kids because they're coming from Zoom sessions and then going to teletherapy sessions. So that's part of why my teletherapy toolkit, we made it more visual. We made it more engaging. There's a kinesthetic portion in almost every activity because this is what increases learning.
Yeah, exactly.
So we have to use the neuroscience. I'm all about neuroscience informing everything in therapy. And, you know, let's look at how the brain works and how to keep kids engaged. And that means they have to be alert, you know,
definitely.
And calm, regulated and alert at the same time.
Well, Roseanne, I have loved talking to you. And I know we have covered a lot of things. I know just from talking with you before we hit record and during this recording, there are so many other things that we could spend hours upon hours chit-chatting about. But is there anything specifically I have not asked that you really wanted to touch on related to what we've talked about?
First of all, this has been a great conversation and I love supporting other therapists. And like I said, I've been grateful to be doing that for a couple decades now. But I would just say that I have a couple things coming up. And one, we have a parenting summit called the Get Unstuck Parenting Summit. It's a free summit for parents of special needs kids. So I would love for people to share that with their clients. And then my book, It's Gonna Be Okay, Proven Ways to Reverse Children's Mental Health, comes out May 11th. And then I have an amazing resource for therapists to use with their clients and to share with their clients. And it's over 100 coping statements. And I'm all about resilience and building coping, right? And it starts with those little things that parents say to their kids to help them independently manage stress, right? Because we as therapists know that resilience is the key for mental health. And it starts with coping. So you can go to teletherapytoolkitbonus.com. That's teletherapytoolkitbonus.com. And you can do that, get that free download there. And if you're on that list, you'll also get the info about my summit and all the other things as well that are coming up. So, but that Dr. Rowe always has a lot of things going on because I truly am on a mission to change mental health for kids and their families, because it's not a good place. And there's a lot of things people can do. And I want them to know about it so that they can start creating those, you know, making little waves, make big waves. And so if we teach parents, that's what all of us therapists do, is we're always teaching them about those little steps that can really make a difference in their child and family's mental health.
I love that. And I will make sure to link all of those in the show notes and everything so people have access. I know I'm going to go and download it shortly after this and everything, and the teletherapy toolkit and everything. So I'm super impressed, but also excited for everything that you have coming up. So thank you for sharing that. And then the last question I ask all my guests is, where can people connect with you if they're listening to this and they're like, oh my gosh, I need more of Dr. Roe.
Well, first of all, you could just put Dr. Roseanne, no E at the end. And basically I'll come up everywhere from Zimbabwe to, you know, Arkansas and California.
Okay.
but so you can go to drroseanne.com. I'm Dr. Roseanne. I'm most social. I'm on TikTok. I'm on YouTube. And a Facebook, I'm Dr. Roseanne Kapana Hodge, and Instagram, I'm Dr. Roseanne. You can connect with me in any of those places.
Awesome. And I will put all those links. And I'm glad you did not mention TikTok till the end, because I could have talked to you for hours about.
And we'll have TikTok. To talk about it. Anyway, that's a whole other conversation.
I've connected with so much
fun on TikTok.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's so much fun. I've connected with so many mental health professionals on there. So, but this has been wonderful. Great. I learned a lot. I know I'm going to take a lot of what you have said and implement it into my practice when I get back from maternity leave. And I know I can think of so many people that I'm going to pass this information along to, have them listen to this episode, selfishly because it's my podcast, but also because I know the information that you shared is going to be so pivotal for so many therapists. So
thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for joining for today's episode of Psych Talk. And I will catch you in the next episode. Bye.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Psych Talk. I hope you found so much value. If you loved what you heard or gained some knowledge, I would love for you to take a screenshot, put it on your Instagram stories, and tag me at Jessica Lee, PhD. Additionally, I would be honored if you leave a review and 5-star rating so I can continue to help this podcast grow. If you are not already, follow me on Instagram and join my Facebook community, Grow Through What You Go Through. Thank you for joining me today, and I cannot wait for you to join me during the next episode. Remember, you are loved, you are worthy, and you are braver than you know.